Are you today? Doing well at all of our campuses, all of our locations, everybody online. Welcome to church this morning. We are looking at Joseph's life, and in particular, there's a phrase that pops up as he is chasing the dream and God revealing the dream in his life. There's a phrase that pops up as the ups and downs of that journey. The phrase is, the Lord was with Joseph. My question to you is, what does that mean exactly? What does it mean when someone prays, you know, God, be with John. Lord, be with my grandma. What does it mean to ask that God be with somebody? There was a conference that was flying me out to speak. And they were so kind, they paid a little extra money, and I got in an exit row. That's like first class for pastors, okay? Like, we were really excited to be in first class. And I sat down, it was one of these planes, got the three on one side, the two on the other side. I'm in the two, and it's just like a nice lady sitting next to me. And I sit down thinking, this is gonna be an incredible flight, right? It's gonna be so good. Got extra leg room, everything's gonna be good. About the time that I get situated, I feel a little tap on my left shoulder. I turn to the left to the guy behind me, and he goes, excuse me, that's my wife. Do you mind if I switch seats with you? Now, he's in the aisle, not the exit row, but he's in the aisle. So I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do? Like, everybody heard the question. And so I'm like, I'm not going to be a jerk about it. So I get up and I turn around and we start to switch seats. It's about that time that I see the guy that he's sitting next to against the window is about a 500-pound bodybuilder. The guy is like, his shoulders are massive. His arms are massive. And I'm not a small guy. And I start to think to myself, well, every good deed, you know, doesn't go unpunished. Like, I'm in trouble now. So I sit down next to this guy. Like this. And I'm thinking, this is going to be a horrible flight. I thought it was going to be a great flight. Now it's going to be a horrible flight. Now, as soon as I sit down like this, I hear a little voice behind me say, oh, well, because she'd seen what happened. Oh, that's my boyfriend. Would you mind if I switch seats with you? And now I'm like, looking at the bodybuilder, he's looking at me like, don't you dare say no, buddy. And I'm like, that's okay. Now, I learned from my mistake. Before I said no, and of course, I wasn't going to say no, but before I said no, I looked back to see who she was sitting next to. Now, it was a gentleman, but a much smaller stature. And so I thought, okay, this is a good trade. I look at her, I look at the big bodybuilder, I'm like, absolutely, of course. And now everybody's kind of watching what's going on as I'm playing musical seats. You know, who's this guy? Like, he was at the extra row, he's popping back. And I'm sitting next to, you know, a nice, you know, young guy, smaller guy. And I'm thinking, okay, it's not exit row, but it's not bad. Sitting there for about 30 seconds, down the aisle comes, I can only assume, his grandma carrying the crying baby who is saying, Daddy! I want Daddy. Guess who's sitting next to me? Daddy. And so the baby gets dropped off with this kid, with this guy, and there she's just crying and fitting around and fidgeting all around. This is airline purgatory, okay? This is the worst situation ever. Well, at that moment, the flight attendant sees all of this that's been happening. Like, you just imagine, she's just got this grin on her face the entire time, sees what's happening, comes up to me and says, I'll tell you what, why don't we give baby and dad a little extra room? You come with me. And she marches me up to first class. So if you want to know what it means to have God with you, that's what it means to have God with you. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, is that what it means? I mean, it's easy to feel like God's with you when things are going good. Right, when you're getting blessed, you get the promotion, you know, the first date went really well or whatever. You come home, you're like, God is with me. God, you're so good. You're so amazing. That's not the hard part. The hard part is trying to figure out where is God when things aren't going well. Where is God when in the pursuit of this dream that he has for your life, this dream that he's placed in your heart and in your head, where is God when the disappointments happen, the discouragements happen, the delays happen, when disease happens in your life? Where is God in those moments? What's interesting about Joseph's story, as we've been letting it unfold, we've told it a few times over the last couple of weeks. If you haven't been here, go and read the story of Joseph in Genesis. It's amazing. But basically, I'll recap it a bit. But the idea is that, and he has these ups and downs in his life. But there's a phrase in his story that keeps popping up again and again and again. And that is the phrase, the Lord was with Joseph. And you just get the sense that part of the reason that Joseph's story ends well, that it ends with these dreams coming to fulfillment, is because Joseph took his journey with a sort of confidence that no matter what was happening, good or bad, God was with him. And that as God allows these different tests to come along in his life, that Joseph sort of takes them in stride and believes that God has a purpose and God is journeying with him. We talked last week about the test of his family. His dad showed him favoritism that got him in trouble, kind of put him a little ego as he's running around in his awesome coat, and ends up getting in trouble with his brothers. His brothers sell him into slavery. He's got this horrible sort of family background, this family experience. And we said last week that that's really something that we all can relate to a bit, because there are no perfect families. I mean, some are worse than others, some are better than others, but none of us come from a perfect family. And with Joseph, you get this sense that even though things are bad or hard, that he has, you know, he feels like God is with him, that there's some sort of purpose in his pain. And the question, the test here is whether or not when those bad things happen, or when you realize that you didn't come from a perfect family, do you let that reality make you better or bitter? Do you let that reality, that realization that, wow, you know what, my family wasn't perfect. Maybe it wasn't all that great. Maybe it was really, really hard. Do you let that allow you? Do you become a victim? Or do you have victory in that situation? Now, I have a friend whose dad is an alcoholic. I have another friend whose mother physically abused him. I have another friend who hasn't spoken to their father in years. Of another friend whose father was never around when he was young and eventually took his own life. And do you know what all of my friends have in common? They're all on staff as pastors at Willow. And the reason I share that with you is because as I learn their stories and get to know them better, what I see is this common thread that each and every one of them said, hey, yeah, I didn't have the greatest childhood, or I had some things that were tough to get through, but I just have this sense that God was with me and that God was redeeming the situation. And sure enough, in some cases, it's these pastors that are allowing their experience to help them and to fuel them to help other people. God is with me. There is purpose in my pain. Joseph passes, I think, the family test. What about a test of integrity? Doing the right thing. You know, the church that I started, we started in a high school, and we had to set up and tear down our church. We had 3 24-foot trailers. We had all the equipment in there. We'd have to roll up on Sunday morning. Everybody would set it up, and then at the end of church, we'd all tear it down. Put it back in the trailers. And so Sunday morning was kind of a hectic deal. And I had young kids at the time. Grace was 5, Luke was 3. And we brought them, like this is a family affair. And so we would bring them in the morning, early in the morning. And as everybody's rushing around, it's hectic. Everybody's setting up, trying to get done before church happens. Sometimes the kids would just get in the way. I noticed Luke just sort of like flash from The Incredibles, shoo, going this way. And I see him shoo, going another way. And I'm like, buddy, you've got to slow down. Like, you're getting in everybody's way as they're trying to set up church. He's like, okay. He's like 3 years old. Next thing I know, shoo, going this way, shoo, going that way. And I get a little frustrated. I got to be honest. I get a little frustrated. I pull him down. I get him by the shoulders. He's 3 years old. I say, buddy, were you running? And he goes, I don't know, Daddy. I wasn't watching my feet. So I spanked him. And no, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. What do you do with that, right? I mean, doing the right thing is hard. Saying the right thing is hard. Living a life of integrity, it's a difficult thing. You look at Joseph's story. I'm in Genesis 39. It says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. This is where he sold into slavery. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. And here's our phrase. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. So in slavery, the Lord was with Joseph. From time to time, he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned. The Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. She's not very subtle. The Hebrew word here is cougar. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Verse 8. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Put yourself in Joseph's shoes. He's not married. He's been whisked away from his home. I mean, maybe no one would ever find out. Certainly, Potiphar, who is, you know, his master, he's got him enslaved. Like, if you want to get back at somebody, I mean, he's got some reasons to do this, but he doesn't. And did you see why? It wasn't because, oh gosh, I'm scared we might get caught. His reason was, how then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? How does he avoid temptation? How does he live the life of integrity? How does he pass the test of integrity? It's because he has this sense that God is with him wherever he goes. It's not about whether I can get away with it or not. It's like, hey, God is with me, and there is purpose to my pain. And God has a dream for me, and I'm not going to mess that up. And so he refuses. And then what's interesting, verse 10, it says, and though she spoke to Joseph day after day, this wasn't a one-time thing. Day after day, he refused to go to bed with her, even be with her. And so what ends up happening is she falsely accuses him of rape. She gets mad that he keeps saying no. And finally, she's like, wow, I'm just mad. And so she falsely accuses him to her husband, Potiphar. And then in verse 19, when his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He burned with anger, of course. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. I mean, can a Hebrew get a break, you know? He's enslaved, he does the right thing, and what happens to him? He ends up in prison. But here we go. But while Joseph was there in prison, verse 21, here it is, the Lord was with him. If it was me, I'd be like, you know what? God, why don't you go be with Potiphar's wife a little bit? Why don't you go be with my brothers, okay? Because you being with me is not always helping me in this thing. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down. But this is not good. I am in prison. Here. I mean, it's a living hell. But I love this quote from Winston Churchill. He says, if you're going through hell, keep going. And Joseph does. And he has this sort of unwavering faith that God is with me and there is purpose in this pain. Goes on to say, God showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. And so the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. And the warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. While he's in prison, he has a relationship with a couple of the inmates. They start having dreams. Joseph is a dream interpreter. And he says, well, here's what your dream means. One of you is going to die, unfortunately. And the other one of you, though, is going to be released from prison. And sure enough, that's what came to pass. One passed away, and the other is released from prison. And then in verse 23, it says, the chief cupbearer, the one that was released, that however did not remember Joseph, he forgot him. Joseph had said, hey, when you get out, can you tell Pharaoh, can you tell other people, like, can you just remember this favor, this thing that I'm doing for you? Can you remember me back here? Help me out, literally. And the guy just forgets about him for 2 years. 2 years. Here's another test. How about the test of waiting? Could you hold on out on hope, hold on to hope for 2 years? I mean, maybe you're in a waiting period right now. You're waiting on a promised promotion. And it's been months. You're waiting to meet just the right person. You're waiting to get the results from the doctor. You're waiting for an investment to mature. You're waiting and waiting and waiting. And if that's you, I would share with you a truth from Joseph's story, and that is that God is with you and that there is a purpose for this pain. Guys, the only thing worse than waiting on God is wishing you had. Can I say that again? The only thing worse than waiting on God, and I hate waiting on God, but the only thing worse than waiting on God is wishing you had. Because you jumped into the business deal without doing the due diligence. You got involved in a relationship with somebody even though they had red flags all over the place because you didn't want to wait anymore. You cut corners to make it happen. And that's coming back to bite you now. The only thing worse than waiting on God is wishing you had. You gave up on the dream. Don't give up on the dream. Don't get discouraged in a season of waiting. I always remember bamboo. You plant bamboo and you water it for a week and nothing happens. You water it for weeks and weeks and nothing happens. You water it for months and nothing happens. After a year, though, nothing happens. And you water it for a second year and nothing happens. In a third year, in a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth year, and nothing breaks through the soil. But oh, on that sixth year, it breaks through. And some species of bamboo, it will grow 9 feet in 3.5 days. So I know, I hate waiting. But don't give up. Don't cut corners. Don't stop. because it's worth it in the end. All right, the test of family, the test of integrity, the test of waiting. And now this might be, it might just be the most difficult test, the hardest one to pass. This is the test of success. Chapter 41, it's 2 years later, and Pharaoh, the king, he's now having bad dreams. And the cupbearer is close enough to the king to hear what's going on. And so he says, wait, I know someone that can interpret your dreams for you. He's this guy back in prison. And the Pharaoh says, well, go get him. And they go get Joseph and they bring him out. And the Pharaoh says, can you interpret this dream? And look what he says in verse 16. He says, I cannot do it. Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Is this the same Joseph? The same Joseph that couldn't wait to share his parlor trick with his brothers and explain all the dreams? And as soon as he had a chance in prison with those two guys, let me tell you the dream because I can interpret dreams. He says, I can't do it, but God will. Do you see the humility? It's not about Joseph anymore. It's not about Joseph getting credit. It's not about Joseph. It's about God. He's intentionally saying, hey, I will do this for you, but you need to understand. Like, I've been doing this long enough. I've been chasing this dream long enough in my life. I have walked through the ups and the downs, and I have seen that God has been with me the entire time. And I just want to take this opportunity to give a little glory to God in this moment, because I can't interpret this dream, but God can. And so he does. And Pharaoh frees Joseph and gives Joseph a job, not as a slave, but really he's in charge of basically all of Egypt. He's just second in command in Egypt, gives him his signet ring, which is like, I mean, it's like winning the lottery, basically. But this is going to be one of Joseph's toughest tests, the test of success. Abraham Lincoln said, nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. See, how you handle success almost says more about you and your character than how you handle adversity. Joseph's brothers endure a famine. Joseph had collected food in Egypt because of dreams that God had allowed him to see. And so the brothers come to Egypt, and the brothers are starving, and basically all of Israel is starving, and they come and they ask Joseph. They get a hearing in front of Joseph, although they don't know that it's Joseph. He's in makeup. He's in, you know, Egyptian garb. And they ask him, will you save our lives? And in that moment, a prideful person, a resentful person, a person of lesser character might say, you know what? No. At best. At worst, say, you know what? Off with your heads. But Joseph doesn't do that. He sees now what all of the journey and all of the ups and downs have been for. He sees why God has given him platform. He sees why God has given him power. Not so that he could be comfortable, not to benefit himself, but so that he could save his brothers and save all of Israel. And he has the character and the humility to say, I'm going to go ahead and pursue that purpose for my life and not a purpose that elevates me. And to say in this moment, there's this moment where he reveals who he is and there's this forgiveness and reconciliation. That doesn't happen. That kind of forgiveness and reconciliation doesn't happen unless you've been through some stuff. But he had. He'd experienced the brokenness of this world. And it shaped his character. He always believed that God was with him and that there was purpose in all this pain that he was enduring. See, God's dream for your life is not just for you. We start off this series, we call it Divine dreams. And I believe, I mean, I want you walking in here going, I got big dreams. I got big dreams for my career. I got big dreams for our family. I got big dreams. I love that. I want that. But I want you to know that your dreams, I mean, at the root of those, it's God is putting hunger in you. God is putting questions in you, these eternal questions of like, where do I belong? And what is my purpose? And what's the meaning of life? And how could I be involved in doing something significant, eternally significant for God? See, it's God's dream for your life is where you find fulfillment. To stop at success is failure. To get to the top of the corporate ladder and go, yes, I made it, I'm done, is failure. To believe that you were put there or that you were allowed to achieve that without understanding that the reason that God allowed that to happen is so that now you have authority and you have resources and you have platform to serve others is failure. And so, Willow, as you journey and as you chase the dreams that God has for your life, as he gives you resources, understand that part of the reason you have more money than you need is that other people don't have what they need. That's the reason. It's not because you're God's favorite. Understand that part of the reason that you have the influence that you have is so that you can stand up for justice. The platform, the power that you have. You were blessed to be a blessing. And to miss that is to fail. To stop at success is failure. And so I'll ask you, if you truly believed that God was with you, and that when the good things happen in your life, they were him propping you up, giving you resources, blessing you to be a blessing. And when the bad things happen in your life, it was God allowing those things to happen, and he was trying to work through them and redeem them. And the tests that come along in your life are really to shape you and get you ready for what God is ultimately going to want to do in your life. It's probably a dream bigger than the dream you have for yourself. If you really believed all of those things, and you didn't let the negative family experience make you bitter but better, and you passed tests of integrity, and you weren't weak in those moments, and you passed all of those tests. Let me ask you, what would you do that is eternally significant for God? If you really believed God was with you, what would you do for him? Joseph couldn't have imagined going through every one of those tests that God was preparing him, that he was going to save an entire nation, including his own family. But God was developing something in him. He was developing something in Joseph when he was in that the darkness of that pit where his brothers put him. God was developing something in him when he was in the darkness of Potiphar's home. God was developing something in him when he was in the darkness of a prison cell. And it was able to happen because Joseph held on to the belief, God is with me, and there's purpose in my pain.